From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A shocking revelation from the founder of WikiLeaks could have serious implications for the U.S. presidential election.
We have accumulated a lot of material about Hillary Clinton. We could proceed to an indictment.
That was Julian Assange during an interview on Britain's ITV this past Sunday via teleconference from his sanctuary inside Ecuador's embassy in London.
But if Loretta Lynch is the DOJ, head of the DOJ in the United States, appointed by Obama, Loretta Lynch is the person in charge of our case, she's not going to indict Hillary Clinton.
Assange said that documents already released by WikiLeaks demonstrate sufficient evidence of criminal wrongdoing by the former Secretary of State to produce an indictment.
There's very strong material, both in the emails and in relation to the Clinton Foundation. For example, we published an email where Hillary Clinton is instructing her staff to remove the classified header of a classified document and send it by non-classified fax. So that just requires one more thing, which is to show that the document was actually sent. But she instructed her staff to violate those classification procedures in the United States. Of course, I think personally a lot of these procedures are ridiculous, but Hillary Clinton has been pushing to prosecute others, and so has Barack Obama, who violate technically these procedures. The emails we revealed about her involvement in Libya and statements by Pentagon generals show that Hillary was overriding the Pentagon's reluctance to overthrow Muammar al-Gaddafi, because they predicted that the post-war outcome would be something like what it is, which is ISIS taking over the country. It's Hillary who was the leading champion in office to do that.
Although the California Secretary of State declared Hillary Clinton the winner of last Tuesday's primary, a declaration that had the media making wall-to-wall pronouncements that Clinton was now the presumptive nominee, as of Monday, almost a week later, some 2 million votes, or more than 40% of the total cast, had not yet been counted. Mark Sovel and Nick Zechevic hosted the Lip TV newscast TLN this past Friday and discussed what was then 2.5 million missing votes in California's primary.
When Bernie Sanders spoke to the press at the White House, he ended his statement by saying something about the final vote in California. What exactly did he mean by that? This is what he said. I look forward to the full counting of the votes in California, which I suspect will show a much closer vote than the current vote tally. Why did he say that? And what exactly did he mean? Well, it turns out, Nick, that there are still now 2.5 million uncounted votes in California, 700,000 of which were provisional ballots, still uncounted. I'm confused by that because when I look up the results of what was the election results in California, here's a graphic that comes up when I search it on Google. 100% reporting. That means everything's been counted. Hillary has 1,940,000 votes. Sanders has 1,502,000 votes. All right, that's 100% reporting, right?
Right.
That can't be wrong. Right, it's out there on Google.
It's Google.
Well, it turns out that actually 2.5 million votes have yet to be counted. That means the difference between the two candidates as it set on the night of the election was around 480,000 votes. That was the difference there. Pretty big difference. And, you know, let's call this for Hillary Clinton. It's a done deal. Well, as it turns out, there's still 2.5 million votes to count. Now, why is it that they haven't counted the votes yet?
Why?
Well, they've called the election. Why bother counting the votes?
You know, we've already moved on to California. We're talking about California. Let's not forget, like, if you look back, this isn't the first time it's happened. They still haven't even counted Puerto Rico either. And and she was also declared the winner there. So this seems to just be the way that they do it.
It's disheartening. Now, I know you don't want to cry over spilled milk. Hillary has been declared the candidate. But there's a lot of people who are very upset, very frustrated, because they feel like their vote didn't matter. Now, for months here, we sat here and said, all these people are saying, when's Bernie going to drop out? We just kept saying, why don't you let everybody vote first and then count the votes and whoever wins, wins. Just let's do that.
You're giving the guy for staying in the race until the end.
How dare he? How dare he do everybody to get to vote? So then here we get to the last big day, and the largest state in the union, and apparently, they went through the process of having an election, but didn't bother counting the votes. And these numbers, by the way, are from the state of California's own website. They put it out there in a way so that you can very clearly see, here's how many people voted, here's how many we haven't counted yet. In California, according to the state of California, there were 3,442,000 votes counted so far. Not counted, 2,586,000. That means 42% of the vote in California has not been counted.
As of press time Tuesday, there were almost 2.4 million votes still outstanding. That, according to the California Board of Elections, with 717,000 provisional ballots and 1.5 million vote-by-mail ballots, along with about 79,000 marked other.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
Those words from President John F. Kennedy seem particularly germane these days, as people who joined Bernie Sanders' peaceful revolution are looking at a Democratic Party convention engineered by the Clinton campaign and Democratic Party leaders to freeze them out. For more on that, we spoke with Professor Anthony Montero, who lives in Philadelphia, where the convention will be held via Skype Tuesday. Well, Tony, Bernie's peaceful revolution appears to be about to be handed over to Hillary Clinton, just as Hillary Clinton may be handed over to prosecutors who may not want to prosecute. Where are things at, and where might we be headed?
Well, where we might be headed is anybody's guess. It is beyond doubt that the ruling elite is in a state of panic, because as we've said over these past few months, we're looking at two insurgent movements, and the corporate media and a good part of the progressive and left media are focusing upon the individuals and not upon the movements. I think that the operative word for explaining this political moment is the word crisis. Somehow that word and that concept does not fit comfortably with the thinking of most Americans. They or we do not understand what the word crisis means. Let me give you my take on what that concept means.
Please.
Crisis is a moment when the contradictions in a social, political, and economic system reach a point where they cannot be resolved without a qualitative or fundamental change in the nature of social, political, and economic relationships. This is where we are. And therefore, the question of, and I put quotes here, revolution, whether one defines it narrowly or broadly in the ways that that Bernie Sanders does, whether one is defining it from a social democratic or a communist or even a liberal progressive point of view. What the prolific use of that concept suggests is that we are in a crisis. It is a crisis recognized by tens of millions of people, and it is a growing recognition among the people, and especially these two insurgency movements, one in the Republican Party, the other in the Democratic Party, that the crisis will not be resolved in the old ways. It cannot be resolved from the standpoint of the way millions of people are thinking, by the forces of the ruling elite, which brought us to this point in history.
You know,
I think we are in, and I might just make one quick statement. I think we're in the throes of a protracted struggle between the people and the ruling elite. I think we're looking at a long period of crisis, of meltdown, and ultimately of the unraveling of the political and economic systems.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have really a pair of matched crises, right? You have the crisis mm-hmm. that's facing workers and and those not even fortunate to have been included in that grouping formally for, mm-hmm. you know, a century or three. And you have, of course, the rulers with the crisis facing workers creating a crisis for their rule. The workers are fragmented and disorganized and have no experience, real political experience governing themselves. And the rulers have, you know, two centuries and change at least since the founding of the United States in managing that. What are the prospects for workers taking advantage of this crisis and bettering their lot?
Well, you know, the fact of the serious weakness of the left, and I use the word left in a broad way at this time, and the 40, 50 years now of intense policies to disorganize the working class, and the fact that most of the leaders of the trade unions have collaborated with that process means that the movements for change take on what we broadly call a populist form. And of course, this is not the best pattern of leadership of organization to bring about change. But because of the weaknesses, the internal, ideological, organizational, and other weaknesses of the working class, the movements for change take on a populist form and often, therefore, are difficult to identify as working class movements. But I think if you get away from the front page and the editorial pages of the New York Times and Washington Post and cable, the cable news networks, if you get away from that and you get below the surface, there is no way to deny that what we're looking at in a lot of contradictory ways and with a lot of ambiguities and a lot of immaturity are working class movements on both sides, on the side for Bernie Sanders and on the side of Trump. Now, the fact of the matter is that these are movements that are also political. In other words, they are talking about ousting this, this longstanding political elite and replacing them with other leaders. How that will play out completely, no one can say. But this is what is at the essence of what we're looking at, and this is what most commentators on the left and in progressive circles have not yet fully grasped. I would say on the other side, and this gets to your point, the elite understand it better than the left. This is a profound moment. It is a turning point moment. We cannot lose sight of this. The fact that 40% of the voters' votes have not been counted in California, but yet the media and everyone is declaring Hillary the winner. And then on top of that, Julian Assange has pointed out, WikiLeaks are pointing out that there is enough evidence that Hillary Clinton, just with the emails, just with her functioning within the State Department, committed not just violations of regulations in the State Department, but what would constitute prosecutable crimes. And we haven't yet begun to talk about the Clinton Foundation and the shakedown of foreign leaders, probably by Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State. It doesn't get any deeper than this, Don. Yeah.
Assange said himself in that interview that we heard before last Sunday that WikiLeaks will be releasing a great deal of information about the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, okay. Mm. That's very important. Mm. Because what I think what becomes a really Watergate situation and Watergate on steroids now is that this was more than a botched break-in. This was a scheme to shake down rich people, billionaires, and government officials to enrich a small group of people, especially the Clintons, aligned to this Clinton Foundation, which claimed to be one thing, but was really, I won't say a hedge fund, but a way to buy favors with the American government. You know, one can therefore readily understand why so many foreign corporate leaders from China and Russia and other places contributed above board and below board to keeping Democrats in the White House, because that was their way of doing business with the American government. The Democrats, in other words, and this is quite ironic given our normal way of thinking, represented the greatest corruption of the political system in this country. And probably the Democratic Party elites took us further along the line of oligarchy and away from democracy than the Republicans have done, even though we generally associate the attack upon civil liberties and the rights of women and the rights of minorities and so on with the Republicans. It is the Democratic Party that has represented this corrupt organization that needed the White House in order to enrich elites in the Democratic Party as individuals and to maintain a corrupt pattern of governance and oligarchy.
You know, the movement behind Trump and Trump's campaign have more or less successfully dislodged the traditional Republican leadership. You know, they are getting a lot of press, but they look to me like a wounded animal when they're on Mitt Romney, you know, the whole lot of them. And then the great hope was that with the Sanders people pushing into the convention, that the Democratic Party could be either restructured in the safety of a dismembered Republican Party, no longer the great threat. And the Democratic Party, if it were going to continue, could be remade in the image of the movement behind Sanders. And what's happening instead is Sanders appears to be ready to exit maybe today or tomorrow formally. He's already made the language that he's going to support Clinton, and he would probably support a Clinton-Warren ticket, assuming he got the right concessions. And those concessions included statements like, well, health care that everyone has, like the rest of the world, no matter how she gets to it, which may be different from the way I would get to it, which means, you know, some tweaking of Obamacare or something. And likewise for college tuition, you know, the same thing, that we disagree on the methodology, but as long as she gets us there. So it seems that by the time of the convention, there's going to be a concession from Sanders, and he's not going to be mobilizing the troops. So what happens to those troops, and what happens at the convention?
Well, you know, and again, I want to see exactly what Sanders does. I mean, you know, Sanders is up under a lot of pressure because, you know, as much as he wants to get out of this thing, you know, and abandon what he calls a political revolution, which I always was of the opinion, he wants to transform the Democratic Party into more of a social democratic kind of party, you know, kind of like the Socialist Party in France or the Social Democrats in Germany and in other parts of Europe. So he was envisioning a more democratic party and remaking it along lines of a Social Democratic Party, with the impetus for that coming from the base of the Democratic Party. That is still alive. And the reason it's still alive is because the Clinton people do not know how to compromise and do not know how to operate in political good faith. And therefore, literally stealing primaries all the way from Iowa to New York and now California, with everything that went on even before the vote was counted or taken, with the AP declaring her the winner of the whole show and all of this espionage around the super delegates and so on and so forth. What the Clinton people have done, and if Bernie accepts this, he will be forever humiliated. If he accepts their overtures to him, and that's what they're making, the overtures to him, not to the movement, what he will be doing is bowing out by giving up the fight that he has been the symbol of. But that doesn't mean the fight is over. Now, what it effectively does is mean, it means that a good part, and we yet don't know, of people who have voted for him will either not vote in November or will vote for Trump or the Green Party or some other smaller party as an act of protest. Which only further advances the crisis of political governance of this country. Because the urge from the bottom, I don't care whether you take Trump saying I'm going to turn the Republican Party into a workers' party, or Bernie Sanders, I want to transform the Democratic Party into a more social democratic party, each side was talking about fundamental changes in the nature of governance and bourgeois rule within the society. And those changes, and I say this to my left friends, those types of changes are preconditions, are preparation for the more fundamental change of the system.
And that one set of possibilities is that Trump gets elected somehow, you know, with a combination of the things you mentioned. And another is that Clinton wins. If Clinton wins the election, assuming that she's not indicted beforehand, what happens then? I mean, the crisis continues to, you know, the various crises continue to germinate. I mean, the workers' condition is not going to improve. The global condition is not going to improve. Wars will continue. The whole Megillah will continue. So what happens?
Yeah, well, you know, while they're not talking about the economy much these days in the political discourse, the economy only, according to the government statistics, only created about 38,000 jobs in May. This is kind of frightening, because we might be on the cusp of another recession and maybe a great recession. Now, all over the world, interest rates are either negative or at 0%, which means, among other things, that big money is being withdrawn from the economy and put into government bonds and sovereign wealth funds and other places that are considered safe. Much of this is in offshore banks, so they don't, these billionaires don't pay taxes. But the fact of the matter is that that Wall Street, the financial markets, the financial oligarchy are deeply concerned about the future of the global economy. And even though it's not being talked about, it is not out of the question that the stock market bubble and so on could burst by the fall or in the fall, and we could enter another recession and maybe another great recession. Now, if this occurs after the election, it will not. It will make governance of the society more difficult. And this is my point. The society is reaching a point of being ungovernable. And this is the situation where tens of millions of people have stated unequivocally that they are looking to alternatives of the current system of rule and to an alternative to the current political elites who have, you know, been in charge for almost 70 years, the whole period of the Cold War and the post-Cold War. I think no matter what happens in the election, most of what we see happening on the ground will continue and intensify. And again, you know, even though we cannot predict, I think it's fair to suggest that upwards of 300,000 protesters could be in Philadelphia during the Democratic Party convention. This is going to be a huge repudiation of the party itself and of its elites in particular, and Hillary Clinton and the Clintons specifically.
It appears that Elizabeth Warren is being positioned to attract some of the people that have supported Sanders up to this point. If you watched over the months the email, Facebook, Twitter traffic among people that support Sanders, Warren has a fairly favorable public relations image as being a fighter against Wall Street and all of that. And yet she is joining, apparently, we'll see, but it seems that she's positioned and has been supporting actively Wall Street's candidate in the presidential election. How much of that is going to be able to translate into pulling people from Sanders?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. Of course, you know, the anointing of a ticket of Hillary Clinton and Warren as as representative of a new optimistic future for the country, and of course tying it all up with identity politics, is going to have an effect. I think, however, especially among the young people and the grassroots organizers of the Sanders movement, they will see this as a cynical political move that we've seen before. Don't forget, we've gone through 8 years of Barack Obama's administration. The excitement that generated has now been dissipated. People see him as a fraud. They see themselves as having been taken and had and bamboozled, and they're not in the mood to have that happen again. So by Warren linking herself to Clinton, she therefore makes a kind of a decision that she's with the establishment, not with the people, although she had claimed to be, as one criticizing Wall Street and the oligarchs and so on and so forth. But I think it would be bad for Warren and her political future. I don't think it guarantees a Clinton election. And at the same time, I think it will be viewed as a cynical move and in bad faith, and will be rejected as such by a good part of the Sanders movement.
Professor Montero, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you very much, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.